Well, it's Robin Mark from his album Revival in Belfast from, well, a few years ago. How Great Are You, Lord? And before that, Chris Rice. And When Did We Fall in Love? The name of that song. It's 10 minutes after the hour. It is a Tuesday morning. And that means none other than Dr. Don Clark is joining us now. Don from Garden Valley, Texas. He's a member of the board at Creation Moments. He is the only biochemist we have on staff here. And Don, we're glad to have you again this morning. You picked quite a topic this morning. We're talking rocks underwater, but not just any rock. Go ahead.
Well, good morning, Dave.
I'm sorry, I'm transfixed by this picture I'm looking at, this rock underwater.
Oh, my goodness. Yes, it is a huge, it's a big rock. It is a big rock. And what makes it interesting are a couple of things. One, it's regular shaped, and it has three gigantic kind of equally sized holes in it. And it's found in the bottom of the Mediterranean Sea on the Adventure Plateau, which is south of Sicily and north of Tunisia, Africa. So we say, well, it's an interesting rock. Did man make it, or is that just a natural outcropping? And the answer to the to the latter question is no. It's not an outcropping, because the rock material, the only outcropping actually of natural rock, is about a 1,000 feet away from where this shaped rock, if you will, was found.
Now, archaeologists have known about this rock for some time, haven't they? But I guess they're just now really starting to examine it. It's in the article. This is an Institute for Creation Research article that we will link to our podcast of our conversation this morning later, so you can go to it. Or you can search for it. Just look for Undersea Monolith at ICR.org. But apparently, they're just now getting to study it seriously, huh?
Well, they are, because they sent, I guess some divers went down in 2014, as the article describes, and not only took pictures, but did some sonar imaging, and really spent some time with the rock. And they came to some interesting conclusions, because this rock is 15 tons, which means, obviously, if it was moved, which it appears that it was moved, whoever moved it there had to have pretty good engineering skills in order to get it in place.
Well, now this rock is 140 feet below sea level, though. It's that far underwater. Could they have done this work underwater, do you suppose? I can't imagine that.
Well, no, that points to not necessarily mystery, because we can understand how it happened. But During the Ice Age, for example, the sea level was a lot lower than it is, today. And, well, why is that? Well, because there was a lot of water on frozen water on Earth, on land at that time. And so the sea level was lower. And so they hypothesized that, if this rock is 140 feet below sea level, then sea level at the time that this rock was probably placed there was maybe even 150 feet lower than it is today. So
that makes sense. Yeah,
it appears that this rock was placed on dry ground, which helps to kind of date the rock, because it would be, if it was placed there on dry ground, it had to be at the time of the Ice Age. And this whole concept we talked about before of the Ice Age being, millions and millions of years ago, and several series of ice ages over periods of time, and we've had several ice ages, doesn't appear, you know, to be correct. It appears also that whoever placed this rock there, as I said, had engineering skills. They not only knew how to cut the rock, but they obviously placed it there for a purpose. Now, maybe it was a marker. We don't know why the rock was there. Mm-hmm. Maybe because of the three holes. Maybe there were, you know, trees or at least timber that were placed in the holes as kind of a signpost to mark territory or for navigational purposes, which in itself would be an interesting feat because evolutionists don't believe that primitive man, end quote, or pre-humanoids had the ability to travel the seas. But this rock seems to indicate that, yes, the sea travel was indeed part of the skill set that these people have, or people had. So it actually brings up several questions as to, well, okay, if this was at the time of the glacial period, why did the waters, you know, rise? Well, as the glaciers started melting, for example, then, you know, the sea level began to rise. And in some cases, we have today even evidence of major local flooding, for example, the Missoula flood in northwest America in Washington, for example. There's a town called Missoula, but the Missoula flood appears to have been caused by a glacial melt, and it flowed into or helped carve, for example, the Columbia River Valley. So it was a tremendous amount of water released in a very short period of time, and apparently as the glaciers were melting, there were probably ice dams, for example, that eventually gave way and released a bunch of water. Well, if you can imagine this type of event happening over and over again across the globe, or at least where the glaciers you know, were, and even in your part of the country, what type of carving, if you will, that would have done, you know, on the face of the earth. And eventually, if you were living on the coast, you know, at the time, you would see your coastline eventually being encroached upon by this rising sea that was taking place at that time. So it's interesting that this rock, for example, being on an elevated part of the seafloor in the Mediterranean Sea, might have been used, and this is pure speculation on my part, might have been used for some type of navigational purposes, as folks either traveled from Europe down to Africa or traveled from Africa up to Europe. We don't know, but it appeared that these people whoever built this thing were intelligent and were obviously fully formed humans with tremendous skills, which would point and would verify, again, the accounts, the historical accounts that we read about in Genesis, for
now,
example.
Now, would these people now, these would have been pre-flood people then? I mean, are we saying here that the Great Flood, and you've told us on numerous occasions how the Ice Age followed on the heels of the Great Flood. Now, I say the Ice Age, but I think there have been several. But do you think this was a result of people who lived before the flood and then were either extinguished or moved on? No, it couldn't have been, because the Ice Age would follow the flood.
Yes, exactly. So, there you go. I was waiting, and if you would.
Well, like sooner or later it clicks in. Yeah,
yeah. Get the chronology right. No, the Ice Age, as we've talked about on this program before, was a direct result of the flood, for example. And so you say, well, why is that? Well, for a number of reasons, obviously, but the primary reason was in order to have an ice age, you got to have warm water. And we know that the temperature of the globe, not just of the land, but of the globe in general, was much more temperate than it is today. That we talked about Pangaea and then how the, you know, land masses broke up into the various continents, ultimately into the various continents we have today. And if, and it appears that from a chronological point of view that the land masses were breaking up, then the other thing that you need to sustain an ice age for any, you know, period of time is you need warm water so you can get the evaporation of water from the oceans. And you also, but you also need cold land. So how do you get cold land? Well, you block the sun. You block sunlight. Mm-hmm. And a great way to block sunlight is through volcanic activity. And we know through, you know, various parts of not only the United States, but other places in the world, a tremendous amount of volcanic activity, you know, happened on this earth at some period of time. And it looks like that was when, kind of after the flood, for example, and when God caused the oceans of the deep to, you know, have valleys so that the water, you know, began to run off. But also, the mountains began to form as continents kind of crashed into each other. And you had subduction of the seafloor under the continents as the continents were moving. And actually, we still have that on the Asian coastline, for example. And you've got Mount Fuji, which is a, you know, great volcano, which we know about. But we have the Ring of Fire down all the way from Mexico and Baja, you know, California, all the way up through the western coast, all due to subduction of the seafloor continuing under the western part of Americas, for example. Mm-hmm. So all of this happened after, you know, as a part, as a result of the flood, which means, according to biblical history, that there were only 8 people who made it through the flood. So all of these folks, the people who actually placed this rock there, had to be descendants of Noah and had to be, you know, living shortly after the flood period. Now, it wouldn't surprise me if these were migrants, and again, this is pure speculation on my part, but mm-hmm. if these were migrants that were part of the migration that took place after the Tower of Babel, and when God came down and confused the languages, because all of the peoples of the world at that time were gathered together in that triangle of three cities, in the middle of the triangle was the Tower of Babel, and they were constructing this tower, if you remember your biblical history, mm-hmm. You know, reach up to the heavens to kind of make a name for themselves. Well, they were trying to be little gods, and mm-hmm. and God had to deal with that. So he confused the languages, and then of course peoples of similar language then migrated to various parts of the
world. It's interesting. You're changing my whole picture of the Tower of Babel here, because in my mind's eye, that was always dry, hot desert. You know, it's Babylon and that area, and it's a hot climate. But now we're saying this had to have happened during an ice age.
It was, yes, exactly. It was. It had to happen shortly after the, well, not shortly. I mean, how long does it take to multiply, for people to multiply on the earth?
Well, within a century of the flood.
Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly. Within a century, I was going to say, probably, you know, 100 years or so, you could have had a large enough population and a grouping of people that, you know, kind of, you know, came together to form this community, which was building, you know, this tower.
And to keep warm, apparently.
Well, yeah, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, I'm kidding.
But it was, you know, during the Ice Age, because even, you know, creation scientists, for example, believe that the Ice Age didn't last millions of years, but actually was only probably, 500 to 700 years after the flood, and started, like I said, shortly after the flood because of all of the activity that was going on, geological activity that was going on post-flood.
Which would place all this in the young Earth creationist view about 4,000 years ago?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And yeah. I'm wondering, because before we went on the air, Dave was mentioning, hey, these people must have been related to Etsy. And, of course, Etsy was the mummy found in a glacier embedded in ice in the Swiss Alps a few years ago. And just putting clues together, this may turn up some interesting information that helps us understand the people that were there and how they lived and the skills they had and the level of intelligence and all that good stuff.
I've got this number in my mind that Etsy was estimated to be 5,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been after the flood?
Well, the dating, dating methods, and you have to kind of look at that and say, well, that would have been, if that date is accurate, it would have been before the flood.
Mm-hmm.
But migration of peoples didn't happen until after the Tower of Babel, after the flood.
Mm-hmm.
And could people have, migrated to various parts of the world, pre-flood? Well, I guess it's possible. They probably had millions and millions and millions of people, on the planet pre-flood, which is something we don't often think about. But, obviously Cain, had to be sent away into the wilderness. We don't know exactly where the wilderness was, but it couldn't have been too far.
East somewhere.
Yeah. Exactly. East. So did he, he probably made it to the ocean, but maybe not. And so, of course he had to find his bride, and obviously it was a descendant of Adam and Eve. And so his bride happened to be his sister, and that brings out, a whole bunch of questions about, getting together and having, having relationships with your sister. But, The timing of all of this, nonetheless, the earliest possible people were, we believe 6,000 years ago, which was at the time of creation, of course. So whether Etsy is actually 5,000 years or is in the, making Etsy a pre, kind of a pre-flood human, or after the flood, in which case he would have migrated to, the peoples would have migrated to that area.
Well, I think that dating could easily have been off, because if he was preserved in ice, it seems to me it would have to have been after the flood and during the Ice Age when he lived.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So, and more likely, we got to look at these dating techniques and these ages as, kind of relative time frames, and not necessarily exact. It's not an exact science by any means.
I wonder how big this rock is. Now, it's 15 tons. That doesn't have to be real big. I can think of 10 automobiles welded together and get something about that size and weight.
Well, it could be, just think of a 15-ton truck, for example.
Yeah.
A gravel truck, which is, it's a good size, so it's not necessarily, as you say, a huge rock. But
And apparently this was chiseled out of a standing rock formation, which was then above the water level, in the middle, south of Sicily, north of Tunisia, and somebody cut it out of, kind of quarried it, and moved it about 1,000 feet and drilled holes in it. And to me, the whys and wherefores of that are fascinating. It'd be fun to follow up, but I have little hope that they can really discover. That's so little evidence to go on. They have to combine it with some kind of other evidence of civilization in that area, I think.
Well, and even the authors of the archaeological, paper did this study, they themselves said, "Hey, we gotta rethink our early civilization because clearly these people had the capability of not only carving such a rock, but in moving such a rock, and obviously water navigation." Which, of course, evolutionists would say, hey, the peoples of that time did not have that capability at all.
Well, I guess maybe the basic quandary here is, when did this happen? Because we know that the pyramids were built, 3,000 to 4,000 years ago? Is that the estimate for those?
I think so, yes.
At Giza. So this may have predated that by, say, 1,000 years. It's hard to tell exactly because, again, the dating methods are, we kind of overestimate their reliability, and we rely on them for things that they shouldn't be relied upon for. So this is a moot point here. How old? Now, of course, the age of the rock wouldn't tell us anything anyway. What we want to need to know about is the age of the work that was done on the rock and by whom.
Right. And, maybe... they might find eventually some tools, for example, at the quarry site or some, but the chances are they moved it, either they put it on a barge of some sort, if indeed it was, they carried it from one location, one dry location overseas to this location, in which case, it was, like I said, on a barge, but they still had to get it off the barge and into position, which meant that they, had to devise some type of transportation means. And, how do you move big stones like that? Well, from the Egyptian example of the pyramids, we know that stones, huge and heavy stones, were moved by just laying down timbers and rolling the stone with a lot of people pulling it, obviously, could move a stone into position into a pretty high elevation.
And of course, the same questions existed with some of the huge stonework in the Second Temple, and that was from a quarry a short distance away, but it was downhill, and must have been quite a challenge to get these monstrous rocks cut in place so accurately and moved to their final location in the construction. So this is all fascinating stuff. If you'd like to read the article again, it's at the Institute for Creation Research. And when our podcast goes up on our website a little later this morning, there'll be a link to the article. But if you'd like to search for it, it's entitled Undersea Monolith Reveals Genius Engineering. There's your search words if you go to icr.org. You can read. It's a very short article, and lots of other fascinating links off this underneath the article. More stone knives made by smart humans. Flat-faced fossil fails to fit evolution. No, I like the alliteration there. Lot of related articles to this one that you can read, and you can spend an hour or two there and learn a whole bunch at the Institute for Creation Research, icr.org. Don, how's Creation Moments getting along? Creation Moments, of course, a ministry that we're very fond of here. We link to it from our website. It's creationmoments.com if you'd like to visit them. You've got an annual meeting coming up, don't you?
Well, we have our annual board meeting in a couple of weeks, and usually it's a face-to-face meeting, so our regular board meetings or quarterly board meetings or teleconferences, but this one's a face-to-face. So we are going to, usually what we do is we have an all-day meeting, one day, and then the next day we spend planning for the upcoming year or years, depending on what the focus is. So we'll be talking about a lot of different things, about hopefully some new direction for the ministry, expanding our reach around the world. Of course, so we have our Creation Moments program that is not only broadcast in English, but it's in Spanish, and it's in Russian, and we have some folks in Asia that are translating it into Korean, Asian languages. So it's being spread, throughout the world, and we're very, very grateful for it. It's both in a written format, so you can go on the website and kind of as a actually we have daily devotionals that are the creation moment tied to a scripture, and in a devotional format, which is called Letting God Create Your Day, and we have several volumes of those available.
And, of course, this ministry now, Creation Moments, is over 50 years old. And over the years, they've accumulated a tremendous number of articles, and they've produced DVDs and videos, a YouTube channel for Creation Moments. So if you're interested in young earth creationist science, I'm talking about here, not just ranting and raving, but science that helps establish and make known evidence of a young earth, you find this interesting. You can contest it, not believe it, but you need to be exposed to it. You need to read it. And I'd recommend the visit to creationmoments.com, tremendous resource. And again, you can link to it from our website, brokenroadradio.com. Don, as always, we're glad you were here, and appreciate the news about this big rock in the water.
Well, thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. And I didn't give David a last question. David?
No. Would you want something?
It's too late now, David. Once the music starts, your history. Sorry.
Okay. I had about 14 questions.
Another time, David.
One more time.